Welcome to episode 124 of the Linux Slugcast. We are an open podcast slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, all you need to do is install a Mumble client on your computer or mobile device. Go to linuxslugcast.com, log in, use the server details there, and go into the Linux Slugcast room. If you would not like to participate, but you would like to listen, we have a listening booth on the channel that you can join and just listen to. If you need any help configuring Mumble on the PC Mumble client, we have a Mumble how-to on the site. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like to discuss and are unable to join us during the live show, you can send email to feedback@linuxslugcast.com, or you can check us out on MeWe. We are also still available on IRC on Freenode. With me tonight is 5150.
Howdy, folks.
Joe.
Hello, hello.
And Netminer.
Hello, gentlemen, and whoever else may be listening.
So, we had a couple of posts to our MeWe site, but I think they're both from the same person, and when I try to bring up that person's site, it would not load up, and I got a 404 error, so I wasn't, I wasn't able to get anything off of it.
Did they say anything in the message other than go to this site?
Well, they're both from a person who posted before called Crean Matthews. The first one was a link to, I think he does a blog, a Linux-type blog. The first one was, "Hello friends, today I want to share with you this information. Surely as recurrent Linux readers already know it, but anyway, I want to show you this player for Linux that I like a lot. It is very very versatile and with many features. I hope it will be useful." It's Olivia. Olivia. Cloud Music Player for Linux.
Right. I actually installed this on that person's recommendation and gave it a try. It's interesting. The only thing it's missing for me is the ability to import the playlists that I have. Or at least if it does have that ability, I haven't been able to find it yet. It works well. It only streams audio, which is the point of it, really. But sometimes it would be nice where, you know, if I wasn't bandwidth limited, to be able to get the video as well. But it works really well.
Yeah,
and
I found the GitHub link for it, so I'll put...
Yeah. You can build your own playlists within there. That could stand to be a little bit more robust, but for just streaming music, if that's what you need to do and you don't have the bandwidth to stream video with it and you're on a desktop, it's great, or laptop.
Now, how versatile is the different type of playlist formats? Because from my understanding, there is you can create different type of playlists and different type of players, and they have their own type of format.
Okay. If that's there, then I didn't get that far into setting up the playlists. From what I was seeing, you could set up a YouTube playlist and it would play in the order that you added things to it.
I think I was geared more towards like music.
Oh, no, I was just testing it for a lower bandwidth streaming, which is what my use case would be at, say, the office, since the internet connection would be my phone, and tethering is limited to 3G. But like I said, it did work well for that. Just streaming audio off of YouTube worked great. And then it connects to another audio service that's, you know, not YouTube. And I didn't get too much testing in on that, but it looked like it had most of the songs that I would normally look for.
Do you know which audio service that was? You didn't?
Not off the top of my head, and it's on my tablet, and I'm kind of wired to my set-top box right now.
Now, this is just a straight desktop Linux application?
Oh, the install on Olivia, I believe it was, it's either a Snap or an app image. You know what, I'm going to get the tablet and then I'll tell you.
Yeah, I tried to walk back up for that Andromeda computer .net, but it seems to be a shared blogging site. And when you know, if you backspace through the article, and the folder is like blog-english, something like that, but you come up with posts from a completely different person.
Okay, I'm back. It is a snap.
Now, where did you find the snap? Was it at the their GitHub page?
Oh, it was through that link that was posted. Okay, I'm actually not seeing what this other service is called, but it does give a distinction between the search within Olivia and a YouTube search. And over on the side, all it says, if I add something to that queue using the non-YouTube service, it just lists it as Olivia.
I did see if I could find that article by Crean on the Andromeda site, but some reason the way the site is built won't let you do a search on the page, so I scrolled down for a while, but all the articles seem to be by the same person, and if you do hit that on Andromeda Media site, you know, if scantily clad women offend you, then you probably would not enjoy looking at the site.
Could I have the link to show notes, please?
Yep. Huh. So real quick, from what I can find, features of Olivia are search your favorite music online, both audio and video, search YouTube and add your collection to a library, play audio-only YouTube streams to save bandwidth, download a media file while streaming, search suggestions, organize music, built-in internet radio that allows you to play more than 25,000 online radio stations, list and sort radio stations according to your country and language. It supports themes, dynamic theme support based on album art. Player MIDI mode included. No idea what that means. Top music chart.
Oh, I can tell you about the player MIDI mode. Instead of like a full-size screen, it's just this little tiny player that can sit off in the corner.
Oh, cool. Top music chart allows list top 100 songs country-wise, and more yet to come.
And Roy wasn't going to bring it to this show, but I could actually suggest streaming content from YouTube. Saw a video the other day on how remarkable the actor Christopher Lee was, and I didn't realize that he was a metal artist. Most of the albums centering around him being a direct descendant of the Holy Roman Emperor Charlemagne. So it's historical heavy metal by Count Dooku.
All right. So the next article that he posted was at least 67% of global businesses in the past 3 years have faced data breaching. The breaching has been reported to expose hundreds of millions of customers. Studies show that an estimated 93% of these breaches have been avoided had data security fundamentals been considered beforehand. And the article is, what are the best VPNs services this year?
Well, I'm still a fan of PIA.
I don't do much outside of my home network, so I mean, I really haven't had a need yet for VPN, though I do want to learn how to do it, just because I think it is a valuable thing to learn.
Well, even at home, sometimes I'll use a VPN. If I'm searching for something that I don't want to appear in, you know, in everyday ads, so for example, recently I was diagnosed with high cholesterol. So I do a search on, you know, how to live my life a little bit better and how to lower my cholesterol. I don't want medicines and other crap showing up in my daily feed as ads. So I'll use a VPN where I'm not logged into anything, and that will prevent those ads from popping up elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm surprised because I have looked at medicines that doctors put me on by name, say, yeah, forget what this one's for, and look it up. And surprisingly, it's not like I'm not getting flooded with a bunch of ads for alternatives.
Cool. I'll still maintain my paranoia, though.
As well you should.
Well, that's everything we have for feedback. I think we now go into 50 show topics.
Okay, and some of these actually mirror things we've talked about. First, some really sad news. We talked a couple weeks ago that Eric Arduini had inoperable cancer. His family was asking for money so they could spend as much of his remaining time with him, you know, I guess opposed to working or whatever. You know, maybe taking a last family vacation. Unfortunately, Eric passed away, you know, even sooner than anyone was expecting, I believe, the end of last week. On Podnut's door, did a 24-hour tribute pod. Well, Door and other Podnutsians did a 24-hour tribute on YouTube. I was in the audience for a lot of that. Was kind of, you know, thinking of joining in with them, but just as well, I didn't, as, Door was pounding, caffeine to stay awake all night while I was pounding beers and listening. So I really probably wouldn't have been any kind of help to anybody had I managed to get in, but I I missed the first part. Then I'd planned to go see a movie that night, so I was gone for a couple hours. And when I came back, I did listen to the rest of the video cast and enjoyed it. I don't think it's up anywhere where you can grab it right now, but I've put the GoFundMe link in the show notes. Now it's going to go to defraying medical and final expenses for Eric. Again, it is gofundme.com/help Eric Arduini and family, and with a hyphen in between each of the words. Link in the show notes. Okay. Mentioned last show that I had put it, grabbed a Diet Pie image from the Pine 64 site and put it on an SD card. And, you know, when I got the 64, it was, you know, my most powerful ARM processor. Well, really, it still is, but, or at least equivalent to my Pine Book. But, you know, I get a ROC 64 and, you know, a lot of other options from Odroid right now for more powerful, faster computers. So I thought, you know, trouble when I got it is, you know, the browsers and stuff was not as smooth on the 64 as it was on a less powerful computer like a Pi 2. It's just more people have been over the code, refining it, and, you know, and all that. I was trying to use a 64 as a desktop, and it just, you know, locked the browser up. And I thought, okay, now there are some other things I would want to run in the background and not drag down my file server. So I decided to install Diet Pi on the ROC 64. Found a more current version of Diet Pi on the Diet Pi download page, link in the show notes. So somebody's kind of dropped the ball over at Pine 64, not keeping their wiki updated. Basically, what I wanted to start off doing with it is set up a Nextcloud server just for me here at home. And since I have that running, you know, throw Pi-hole on it, shouldn't be too much more of a load on the system. Also, Ben wanted to do a home VPN. We talked about VPNs early. You know, security would be one thing. I guess if I was away from home and really had to get to my bank, I would not want to go directly. You know, so if I could VPN through my home system, I could do that. You know, for anything financial, if for some reason I just had to get into my bank account or to PayPal or something. Hopefully I would never ever need to do that when I was away from home. The other thing being that some hotels or whatever block streaming services like Netflix, so set it up so and most of the hotels they know if you're using a cloud VPN, and they block that too. But they wouldn't, I don't think they'd necessarily know if you were trying to stream Netflix or Hulu or whatnot from home. So, and this is more just an experiment. Like I said, most times when I'm away from home, it's because I'm at an event. So if you're at an event sitting in your hotel room watching Netflix, you're doing something wrong. But, you know, typical road warrior, this would help them out if I can get it figured out. I'm sure I'm not the first person to work on that. But I remember having this problem before messing with Diet Pi. Copy the image to the SD card. For some reason, a UNet booting does not want to work under Fedora for some reason. I think I've mentioned that before, I'm sure, that it'll ask for root password, you give it, and it doesn't do anything. won't continue. So just using DD, but that's okay. I've been using DD for years. But put the partition on there, and I've been trying to short circuit sort of what they want you to do because using Pi-hole, I want to set a static IP on the system and also change my passwords and make sure that all that works. And the way DietPi is set up, the first run through, you can't just go in and say, okay, I want to reboot now, because they want you to pick the softwares that you want to install on the system and have them run through it. There is a way out. If you the top level menu is like the installation menu, and then the first selection on that is configuration. And if you go to that, I believe it's security, and then you can drop down to change host name. And if you change the host name, that gives you the option to reboot. But I did all that after setting a static IP and rebooted. And first thing, if I change my root password to a perfectly valid root password, it's not recognized. Second thing, the IP doesn't change. There must be a timeout on these headphones. Maybe I mentioned before. I had a message, auto shutdown enabled. Press power to continue. That's convenient. Okay, so where was I? But yeah, anytime I went through their menus and changed my root password and rebooted, the new password was not recognized. I did go through one time. There is a file, once you copy the image to the SD card, and before you take it out of of the computer that you use to copy the image to the SD card, you can go onto the partition on the SD card, and there's only one on Diet Pie and go down to boot/dietpie.txt. And if you scroll down, you can find the default root password, or I think they call it general password, and change it. And I did that, and I think at the same time, as always, only change one thing at a time, folks. Also, while I was in there, I expanded the partition using gparted. Before I took it out of the computer, I used to copy the image. In other words, this is based on Raspbian, and by default, Raspbian, the first thing it does when you put the when you boot up in the Raspbian is it expands the partition to fill the whole SD card. And I tried to do that manually on my own, and that probably stopped. So I did that and it didn't boot. I don't think I ever tried it just editing that file. But from my experience, what I plan to do is go through the whole DietPy installation without changing the passwords. I know that sounds dangerous, but as long as nobody's already on my network, then they're not going to be able to get to it. And once I'm done, make my quote user account, the one that's not root, make it a sudoer, so it can, you know, I can use sudo to do whatever I want from that account, even if for some reason the root account's compromised. Probably copy that account to the to a new account with the login name that I usually use, because I can change the password on the user account and it works. But you know, if you log in using the user account, it says, well, you can't do anything because you don't have root privileges. Change the passwords over at SSH. Try it that way. I was kind of hoping, make the passwords work before I went through the whole, hours long process of getting all the soft alled, but looks like it's best if I don't buck the trend and just install DietPy the way the DietPy people tell me that I should be installing it. Okay, I found out about another way to run Windows games on Linux called Lutris from a Linus Tech Tip on YouTube last week. And again, if you haven't heard me say it, this is a guy named Linus. I believe he's up in Canada. He is not, he's not Linus Torvald. But the show is Linux Aware. And basically, it actually wasn't Linus, the normal host, doing it. A couple of his support people, and one of them explaining to the other how to run Windows games on Linux. And of course, they talked about Steam and Proton, but they also talked about Lutris and installing that. And so I put that on my system, and it will install Steam games. It will access your Steam account, open up Steam, and see if you've paid for that game, and then attempt to install it, the Windows game, under Linux. So if you install it via Lutris, then you've got to play it via Lutris, even though it's a Steam game. Let me look at the interface. Little annoying starting off. You install it, and the first thing it does is take you to a web page with their handout. And I'll gladly pay for it once I get it working. I want to make sure it works first before I send you any cash for it. But get it working, yeah, definitely. I am glad to compensate you folks for your time. Let's see.
No, I tried to convince Leo from the Mint cast to jump on because he's got some experience with Lutris. I've tried it a couple of times, but mostly with games that didn't work with Proton, and then they also had the same problems in Lutris.
Right. The one I'm trying to install now that's supposed to work is Metro 2033. And of course, that's a huge download. But by default, it installs several what they call runners and other things they don't. But if you have the game images, I'm just starting at the top. Adventure Game Studio, Atari 800 emulator for Atari 400 and 800. Browser installs, so it runs games in the browser. Citra for Nintendo 3DS. DESMUME and Nintendo DS emulator. So I'm looks like this thing will do a lot of the stuff that I'm trying to think of the emulator for ARM.
MetroArch?
Yeah. D-Gen, Sega Genesis, Dolphin, GameCube, and Wii, DOSBox, Fro, Z-Code emulator for text games like Zork, FS, UAE, and an Amiga emulator, Atari and Atari ST, Hygen, multiple systems, JZ, NTV, Intellivision emulator, Libro, again, multi-system, and then Linux runs native Linux games, as you would expect, MAME, Mednafen, for NES, Game Boy, PC, others. Melon DS, another Nintendo DS. MES, multi-system. Muppin 64 Plus, Nintendo 64 emulator. O2EM and Magnavox Odyssey emulator. Osmos, Sega emulator, PCSX2, PlayStation 2 emulator. That's getting a little close where Sony's going to come after you. Pico 8. I guess for Pico 8 cartridges, that must have been a game at one time. Sony PSP, Red Dream, a Dreamcast, Rycast, another Dreamcast, Residual VM, various 3D games like Grim Fandango and Escape from Monkey Island. So, little Microsoft stuff. Lucas Games. RPCS3, PlayStation 3. Scum VM, and that was a lot of the old point-and-click adventure games, SCNS9X, Steam, of course, installed by default, Stella, Atari 2600 emulator, TIC-80, a TIC-80 computer, coming to the end, Vice, Commodore emulator, Virtual Jaguar, of course, Atari Jaguar emulator. Web runs web-based games. Wine, which is installed by default. Wine Steam runs Steam for Windows games. And Z-Doom, I guess, for Doom. So most of those are not enabled by default. But you have a lot of flexibility if it works. Now, I kind of went through the web and the browser to find the game. And one I knew that I did own on Steam and hadn't installed on Linux. And so I've got it cranking supposedly again on Metro 2033. Now, when it first came up, it had been a while since I had updated my Steam client. So it, you know, it came up and, you know, sort of Lutris was wanting to move forward while Steam was updating. So it looked like that was a conflict. So I shut them both down and then got into Steam, you know, clicked on Steam to have it self update. Then the next time I ran it, it said, you know, okay, found the .msi file for Metro 2033, ran Steam. You know, you could see the Steam client pop up, and then ran the MSI installer for Metro 2033. And then now after that, there's a window open, and it just says installing game data. And of course, my slow connection speed probably would help if I get my connection speed up to what I'm supposedly paying for. I need to beat on that next week, maybe. But yeah, it may be looking at my, because it doesn't seem to be impacting my bandwidth. So it may be looking at the bandwidth and just noping out. But unfortunately, there's no progress bar of any kind, so I can't tell if it's doing anything or not. So hopefully I can report back, because like I said, I had not had the success with Proton that I was given to expect. I need to go back and look at the show notes that I did on how to make Proton work myself, and make sure I've checked, you know, crossed my I's and dotted my T's and all that in all the right places. I thought I had, but when I set up this new system, but maybe not.
Yeah, Proton's a little hit or miss for me as well. There's several games that just won't run.
Well, I mean, I've tried to install ones that the Proton DB says do run, and not had any luck.
Like which ones?
Oh, I'd have to run some look.
The only other thing that I had to do to get some games to run better or run at all was make sure that I was running the most recent graphics drivers.
And that's another thing Lutris is supposed to do, is make sure that your graphics drivers are up to date. So definitely if nobody's played with Lutris, even though that YouTube link I put in there, it's not strictly a Linux show. They are definitely open source aware, and if you haven't heard of Lutris, that may be a good place to start by clicking on that and watching the show. Okay, the next link, one I haven't tried yet, it is Leon AI. And if you remember a few weeks ago, I talked about a project I was disappointed didn't seem to have gone forward. Originally named Cirrus, that I saw 2016 at PenguinCon. And at the time, what it was, it was a lot like an Echo, or, well, it's more like Siri, really, a privately hosted Siri. And essentially, they download Wikipedia into your home server. Wasn't so much for, say, home automation or things like that at the time, but more for answering questions, you know, how tall is the Eiffel Tower, something like that. They had an Android app for it, but it required a home server, and the home server had to be at least an i5. And at that time, that was kind of a tall order. Most of us didn't have an i5, you know, well, I've only recently got an i5 here I'm sitting at to use as my PC. But, you know, right now, like I said, that, you know, I got this thing off of Walmart for 300 and some change. And without a discrete video card, it'd be $100 cheaper. So, you know, that's not such a tall requirement anymore. And they originally called it Cirrus, and I don't know what they were thinking. Then they changed it to Lucinda. And if you recall, best as I can tell, they've somehow morphed it into an artificial intelligence phone, well, not so much a phone answering system, but a help desk sort of deal for banks. In other words, way to call in and get questions answered without even having to interact with personnel that they have to pay for health care and salary and whatnot. So this Leon AI, I believe it only runs on Intel hardware. And I'm not there. Oh, I should have meant to watch that video that's down at the bottom of the page there on the GitHub. So that'd probably tell you more about what the requirements are. But yeah, that might be something I would throw an old PC at, put it on the network just to see what it's like, because I was really disappointed that the other project just never seemed to go anywhere useful to the FOSS community. All right. I won't be here for the next show because I will be at PenguinCon 2019 in Detroit. Couple other things that are coming up, but they're not on weekends that will interfere with the show. Next one after that, I am not going to Linux Fest Northwest this year. I decided best as I could. The Podnuts guys aren't really going to be making an appearance there this year, so I just can't go everywhere. So next place I'm going will be Texas Linux Fest. Hope to see you there, Joe. I know you
Yeah, I'll
said
be
you were going to
there.
go, and it's like last weekend of May, and for well, last weekend of May, first weekend of June, same weekend. So 5:31 through 6:01, and I'm going to drive the hearse down there. And related news, I think I've mentioned this before, won't be at SELF this year because it's the same weekend as HearstCon in Denver. So I'm going to check that out. Looking at the picture, seems like this kind of steampunk thing, bunch of people hanging out. I guess most of the accommodations, just park your hearse in the campground and air up an air mattress in the back. So that could be an interesting and a bunch of driving around and seeing sights and stuff in between. So that could be an interesting 3 4 days, I hope.
You want lots and lots of pictures.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'm taking the camera. When I get the rear view camera set up, I'm still screwing around with that. But once I get the backup camera connected on the deal clips on the rear view mirror, it's also got a forward facing camera, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of driving pictures and stuff like that I'll be able to record. And Joe, do you know the area very well? Where Linux
Irving?
Fest is, it looks like.
Irving is about 40 miles away from where I live. I don't spend any time there at all. But if you wanted to go further north and see what's good to eat there, I can probably recommend a few places.
Well, that's exactly where I was headed, because it looks like in the immediate area there is like this sort of Sony music complex, and it looks like there's a couple bars and some restaurants in there, but nothing else in the area. At
Yeah,
least
like I said, I never go to Irving.
wise, nothing what you would call walking distance. But yeah, it does look like there's some interesting restaurants in the town. So yeah, hopefully we get together.
Well, yeah, you've got all of basically Plano, Allen, Richardson, everything north of Dallas really to work with.
Oh yeah. Shoot, I meant there was some more feedback here. Let me see if I can find it because I was asked by some guys who recognize the name if I was going to Texas Linux Fest. Just a second. Yeah, Ed Leach. He's going to be there and asked if I was going. So what I told him, I've got your email, Joe, and I've got his email. What we've been doing last few years when we hit Linux Fest is set up a shared Voxer deal. That's kind of like a walkie-talkie program on Android. So create a group, press a button, and send an audio or a text message to the whole group that, hey, we're meeting up here, or we're gonna get lunch there, whatever. So I'll send you guys invites when it gets closer.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll give it a try. Otherwise, it sounds a lot like WhatsApp.
Yeah, it's similar. Okay, only had a couple news links. That is because G Plus going away. I've been too heavy relying on links other people provided lately. I have subscribed to some news services. Hopefully, we can pull some interesting stuff out of those going forward. Apparently, just in this last week, Facebook admits that they also stored Instagram account information as plain on their servers, but it's okay because our employees would never do anything nefarious.
Yeah, definitely no trust there.
And I know I meant to bring up, I think, Gallium OS for Chromebook because I'd seen some stuff. Yeah, here's a new way to install native Linux on a Chromebook, and you can either do it dual boot or have it wipe the whole thing and just install Gallium OS. But I had seen the pages for the install, but this weekend I was trying to remember because I could not find the page that I had seen, and talking to Dor in the chat during the 24-hour show and said, yeah, what's that new thing that's come out? And he told me, yeah, I don't think it's very compatible, or could be more compatible. Let's see, where'd it go? I guess I can open it from the link. So a lot of stuff, no across the board, not supported. A lot of stuff supported, but not with the factory firmware. So I don't know if I'd want to go messing with the firmware on my Chromebook. Because I'd like to be able to get it back. A few no's on dual boot, but most of the yeses again are after firmware update. So if you're not comfortable installing a non-factory firmware on your Chromebook, then probably maybe Gallium is not the best idea. Okay, that's all I had for this week.
Well, I guess that means it's me. I did put a couple of things in the show notes. I wanted to ask you guys, do you encrypt and why?
You mean like whole hard drive encryption?
Yeah, I do mean whole hard drive encryption. Or just do you just do the home directory? Or do you encrypt your emails? Or do you use an encrypted text message service? Or do you regularly use a VPN?
No.
Well,
you just let it all hang out?
I don't, like, a lot of my stuff does not leave my home or my home network, so I have less fear of something going wrong. And then even if they get, like, any of my laptops or anything, they're not going to get anything on it. There's nothing sensitive, interesting at all on any of my laptops, so I'm not worried about that, anybody getting to the information that's on my laptop. Banking.
Well, here's a silly question. On any of your laptops, does your mother's maiden name appear?
Nope.
Okay. Your birth date?
Nope.
I've personally had a bad experience with encrypting just the home folder years ago. It was a version of Ubuntu. I can't remember which one it was. Eventually got it back, but it was a whole bunch of mount the hard drive on another computer and what is it where what's it called when you take ownership of the hard drive or of the volume?
Chone?
Yes, chone. Yeah, you know, go in, chone the drive, you know. Once I saw a tutorial on how to do it, it wasn't terrible, but it was just for some reason I've been going along and, you know, I think it was tied, you know, to my login password, so it was transparent, you know, but encrypting the home folder. And again, like Honky, you know, I keep all my files on the home server, you know, more so that, you know, I can access them through any computer. Now, yeah, there would probably be things like stored browser password, stuff like that. And I know Ken Falanoy says, yeah, you're crazy if you leave home with an unencrypted laptop. So I see both sides of that, but I have had bad experience just for, you know, no reason the drive locking up.
Right. It's that security versus convenience factor. If you make it too cumbersome to be able to do encryption, then nobody's going to do encryption.
And I think I would probably do, you know, if I were to do it again, I would, only encrypt the home folder, not the whole drive, because, you know, binary files, everybody has the same files. There's no, or can get the same files. There's really no point in encrypting those. I guess they could see your logs.
See what applications you use.
And, you know, anything sensitive, if I had to carry that around, I'd put it in an encrypted file in my home folder. You know, one of the third-party encryption
Okay, programs. So instead of doing the entire home folder, you would do it in a subfolder.
Right, but probably, you know, what am I thinking? The ones based on, you know, built Versa into the crap. Operating system.
Hmm. Okay, well, moving on from that, I guess. I found an interesting video. You've probably already seen it or got an update about it, but this is also from Linus Tech Tips. And it's called Apple Won't Like This, Run Mac OS on Any PC. And the reason I brought it is because they say right from the beginning that the easiest way to do it is to set it up on top of Arch. And they show you the whole process from beginning to end on what you have to install with Arch and how to set it up on its own graphics card, a VM that has a dedicated graphics card, and how to set up the dedicated USB so you can hot swap USB using Apple compatible, PCI Express USB card. And it was just a really interesting setup on how they did it and the places they went out to find the workarounds.
I've been meaning to watch that. I saw it. I hadn't sat down and watched it yet. I can see it as an exercise. Of course, the whole problem with that is it's not a free operating system. And right. They wink, 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 nudge, nudge. At that, you know, but it legal, I'm not going to pay Apple $300 to set up their operating system on a PC or whatever it is.
Right. Their major point with that, and they did mention that there was some questionable legality there, and if you did it at home, you were doing it at your own risk. But, you know, their major talking points was the fact that Apple hasn't really updated their hardware in a really long time. So if you want top-end graphics, you're not using a Mac. But with this, you could. So if you're dedicated to, you know, the Mac operating system, but you want updated hardware, this is a good way to do it. And they were also kind of implying the whole issue with the hardware from Mac not being really worth the cost compared to what you can get elsewhere.
Right. I'm surprised to hear you say that they're, as I understand it, you said they're running it in a VM. You would think you'd have to have a really fast video card to beat out whatever they're using bare metal.
Well, they were using, I think they said they were using either a 2060 or a 2080. So, yeah, they were using top end there, but they were also talking about basically a minimum install, which is why they were recommending Arch, and then dedicating basically as much of the processor as you can and as much of the RAM as you can to the VM.
Well, I mean, I'm even hearing Flying Rich say, "No, I'm never going to set up a Hackintosh again." So, I mean, I said, if I could do it without costing any money, then wipe it out. I think it'd be an interesting thought exercise, but I'm not sure it's, you know, once you get into Mac, then you got to pay for the software. You know, I don't see any point.
Right, right. Well, if you wanted to test it out, and you know, not actually use it beyond testing. The way they talk about doing it, you can do it as long as you have someone or know someone that has a Mac that you can use for a short period of time. And like I said, I don't recommend Mac. I would never buy one. If somebody gave me one for free, it'd be running Linux by the end of the day. But it was a cool setup.
Right. I have some old ones, and by old ones, I mean clear back to the 68K. Days. I do have a few power PCs, but
it has to be High Sierra.
Yeah, I don't have any Intel Macs.
Yeah, but he really has been showing a lot more attention to Linux in recent shows.
Well, that goes to show you that's the way of the future. Despite what a lot of people say, oh, it'll never be the year of the Linux desktop. Well,
said every year is the year of the Linux desktop.
Well, you know, like I said, the one I reference, and a lot of it was for the sake of the show. You know, the one guy showing the other guy, never been on Linux, don't know anything about Linux, and Linux is too fiddly. I don't want to have to learn all this stuff. And you know, the other guy reminded me, well, remember, and both these guys half my age, probably, or two thirds. But yeah, remember back in the day when you had to mess around and figure out, you know, which memory manager you had to do, you know, and this and that and the other thing, you know, just to get the game working, especially with the demo. So, you know, I think most of us who are gamers remember those days when you just didn't stick a disc in and installed and you started playing the game, that you had to spend, you know, significant amount of time optimizing the system so it would actually run. And I've always wondered why those people, you know, why gamers weren't the perfect audience for Linux in the first place.
They had a more convenient option.
Well, of course, everybody wants to just, you know, jump on their Xbox or their Switch now today.
No, you still have a rather large, you know, PC master race.
Yeah, CPU Magazine, computer power user, Maximum PC.
Yep, I used to be a subscriber to Maximum PC. Used to really enjoy their podcast. Maximum PC and PC Gamers, the same guys.
By the way, if you look around some of the European magazine, Linux magazine, and Ubuntu user, they have a deal on DVD versions of their back catalog. They even have it in Mid Magazine as a DVD, but I don't think a mint is my flavor.
What's that?
The people who put out Ubuntu User, they used to have a Magpie disc, but that one sold out. And Linux Magazine, the European stuff, which includes Linux Voice, have a deal where you can get basically their back catalog in a searchable DVD.
Cool.
Appears to be PDF, EPUB of some kind. I haven't bought it, but when you look at the cost of the thing on the shelf and the cost of the thing on the disc is about the best deal since buying Alaska. I mean, I only buy certain magazines off the shelf when they fill in specific niches in my Linux food.
Yeah, I usually only pick up the free magazines.
I guess one thing probably ought to mention, just because every podcast in the last 2 weeks has, and they've kicked it around pretty well, so I don't know if we need to go too deep into it, but is Google Stadia.
Yeah.
I thought we already talked about Google Stadia.
I thought that was mentioned too.
Okay, maybe we did it 2 weeks ago.
I got an interesting link from my brother, which is non-technical as they count. It was a YouTube link to somebody who was announcing ARM taking over for ARM coming up on the outside to blindside AMD and Intel.
With graphics or with servers?
They were generally talking on the server side.
Yeah, you do hear a lot of up and coming about ARM servers, lower power with similar performance.
Well, one thing, I guess Qualcomm appears to, I don't know if they're fighting or if they're actually going to do it, but they seem to be making some serious noises about coming out with an ARM data center CPU or CPU setup.
Well, there's already ARM servers, but yeah, it'd be cool if you had the thing a few years ago where Facebook came out with, yeah, this is how we do our whole server farm, and you know, a lot of details. It'd be cool if somebody could do that, you know, do the equivalent with ARM.
One of the interesting things that they were saying about the ARM dives that they're waving around is that if you remember when you did 386 or whatever CPUs back in the day, they had a North Bridge and South Bridge chip.
Yeah. Right. Well, into the 486. Not on the chip, but on the motherboard.
On the motherboard, right. Well, it appears that they're talking about doing the same thing with multiple core dies or etchings, whatever you want to call them, and then having a big die, which is which is all the plumbing, memory controller, you know, whatever. So you have your cores, and instead of having them have to deal with the outside world, there's a special nanny chip that handles everything that's not a crunch. The spiritual successor to the North Bridge and South Bridge chips, if my
scan if my following the video is anywhere near accurate. Interestingly, that chip would probably be where any graphics processor could be stuffed as well. When I'm talking a chip, I'm also talking not a separate socket, but a separate surface item on the same substrate.
Right. In the old days, it was very unusual. You'd be able to pop out, say, the North Bridge or the South Bridge and update them or anything like that. They were hard soldered.
Well, I'm saying what they're doing is doing the same thing with it's going to be like the old hybrid where they have several processor sections, and then in the middle of the chip is something that everybody just talks to the hand, and it hands out whatever else it needs to talk to the world.
Sounds like that would streamline coding. I'm not so sure it would streamline processing as much as you could.
Well, I think because this is all ARM, they're talking anything that looks like talking to the world or doing something that's not risk CPU-ish would be handed off to this glue, huge glob of glue in the middle.
Now, would this mean that we'd only have to have one ARM image rather than, you know, an image for each ARM board?
Well, this is at chip level, so you're talking a super sock, or at least this serves the little ARM flakes just like the North and South Bridge served the 286, 386, 486 chip, but they're on the same on a same silicon foundation. Some of the thermals that I've heard of some of the AMD and Intel chips are outrageous. 300 watts, maybe more.
Probably unsurprising.
Well, they're just saying that, you know, they're throwing silicon at it and shrinking it only works too far. And since they have to plow through these generations of aggregated instruction sets and carry the silicon to execute all of them, squeezing more horsepower out of it is requiring a lot of burning a lot of electrons. Since I'm drilling over an i5, all of this stuff is a bit of a joke. I mean, an i5 in the anywhere from 2400 to 4500 class.
All right. Do we have anything else for tonight?
I don't.
Pretty sure I'm done.
All right. So our next recording date will be May 3rd, 2019. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We'd like to thank Delwyn for the use of the Mumble server. We would like to thank 000 Web Host for our web hosting. And finally, we'd like to give a special thanks to Father Finch and Tony Bemis for all their help and support over the years. I have been your host this evening, Honky Magoo. With me tonight has been 5150.
So long, folks.
Joe.
Good talking to you.
And Netminer.
Just because of the date, if you're listening to this live, those who celebrate it, happy Easter. And those who observe, I hope you have a fine Passover or whatever your holiday is in this season of the year.
Well said.
Absolutely. Good night.
Hello, Honky.
Hello, Netminer.
How do I sound?
I was just about to say, did you get a headset?
Yes. I got a real honest-to-goodness Logitech H540 headset.
Very nice.
Well, it's been a rather expensive headset. The reason I had to change over was the laptop I was using developed some video problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was getting vertical stripes every so often on the video, in the screen.
Oh, fun.
While it may be a computing engine, it's not exactly something you could, I would run X on. I mean, I might be able to run it over the network, but because this showed up on both video outputs and its built-in screen had already died, it's not exactly what I consider a high reliability unit.
Yeah.
Also, it appears that I may be getting a brand new tablet.
You were talking about that before, but now is this the different one than the one you're inheriting, or?
My brother has decided that he prefers the tablet that I would have inherited.
So you're getting the new one, or are you getting your own?
I'm getting the new one. This is a Samsung, A? Yeah, it's a Samsung 2 gig memory, 32 gig storage, up to 400 gigs in SD card.
Is that an Android tablet?
Android 8.1.1.
Nice.
I have yet to notify my brother that he may be shooting himself in the foot by keeping an Android 7.1 tablet.
Right.
Now, do you think I should warn him about that?
I don't know. Do you know if they're offering updates to that tablet?
AT&T's answer is, for a few dollars more, here's your new tablet. Sign on the dotted line. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm not saying that I've asked AT&T about updating one of their older tablets, but I presume that they're handing him a new one so that they can get a new contract. They're not really interested in last year's model, which he has already paid for.
Right.
Also, my brother reports he's getting a microwave and satellite TV in his truck.
Nice.
Well, his company seems to be a first-class outfit, and they work their people, they tend to reward them pretty well in everything except perhaps the paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
Well, truckers are called unskilled labor, so they don't have to pay minimum wage.
Right.
Now, this is unskilled labor that has to have a federal license, so this does not compute in my book.
Right. But I feel like if you have a CDL license, you can kind of pick and choose the job that you want. You know, there's a lot of them out there for people with CDLs. Plus, like I think you've said before that he's rated to drive just about anything, so you know, if the pay isn't right, I'm sure he could find somewhere where a job where the pay was right.
My brother is still planning on retiring early to the Philippines.
Why the Philippines?
Because his married girlfriend is there.
That would make sense.
Married girlfriend in the only country that I know of without divorce. Even Ireland got wise to that one. He doesn't believe that he could support himself on retirement in the United States. When I've tried to point out several minor problems, like the alien tax and the fact that medical care in the Philippines is strictly cash and carry, he just page faults.
Yeah. Plus, if it's somewhere you want to, you're going to be retiring, I would try to retire somewhere that has really great health care. I hear Canada is nice.
He also doesn't understand a Latin-style government.
What's a Latin-style government?
Well, it's like Mayor of Chelsea. The pay is lousy, but the tips are great.
Gotcha.
This is a country where workers visiting home have to shrink wrap their luggage to get it past customs, so customs doesn't sandbag them with a round of ammunition and charge them with importing illegal firearms.
Do people actually do that?
Why not? You're the customs. You're the law.
I don't mean that part. I mean actually shrimp-wrapping their luggage.
That's what I'm told by my brother. Of course, this message does not seem to sink into the quality of law enforcement.
Yeah, that sounds frightening.
There's a lot more enforcement than law, I understand.
Yeah, I could do without that.
He swears up and down that there's no insurgency problem on the island he's going to. The concept of boats has seemed to have missed the concept of boats in a island archipelago. That's also why the U.S. Army had the Colt 1911.
Why?
Because a load of 38 special would not stop a Philippine Muslim extremist.
Ah.
I don't mean a bullet, I mean full six. That's why a lot of people do not like the 9mm. They say you need 40 or 45 for dangerous people.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
How do I sound?
Good.
Okay, just be careful which set you sit on top of.
I got to work about 5 minutes ago.
I have been technically out of work since Thursday at 1 p.m.
Like, no longer have a job out of work?
Like, 31,000 of us walked out of work.
I didn't hear about that, but I ain't seen the news much either.
Yep. All Stop and Shop employees, it's a grocery store chain up here, walked out on April the 11th at 1 p.m.
Why?
Wages, health care, pension. They don't want to pay for holidays. They don't want to pay. It's a whole bunch of stuff.
Cool. Are you collecting unemployment, or how does that work?
Well, I filed for unemployment. I think I got accepted for it, but it's a filing for unemployment is an interesting process that I am very new to, and I'm hoping everything goes okay with that. But I mean, we'll see.
Hey, 50.
Hey, 50.
Evening, everybody.
I'm supposed to get a strike pay too for manning the line.
How does that work?
Also not sure, because that doesn't come into play until you've been standing outside for a week, and we're just over a week now, so.
Is the company paying it?
No, the union pays that.
You have a union and you still had to strike?
Well, that's how we striked, was because of the union.
I've obviously missed quite a bit already.
Surprisingly not. I know there seems to be a hole in my glass. Literally, it's leaving tracks when it shouldn't, and they're not condensation. I was shocked to see our number one showing up this close to our nominal start time.
Yeah, actually, for once I wasn't trying to hurry home from town or anything. I was trying to get another episode of television, but couldn't get the internet to cooperate, and by the time I got it evened out, I just watched a YouTube video and ate a salad and came in and sat down. Probably TMI, but one of those deals when you live alone, I'm probably not telling you anything that minor, you get a bag of salad earlier in the week and you have a salad and come back, it's like, yeah, I better finish that up. And you open up, look in there, yep, better get that eaten because it's going to be nasty tomorrow.
Well, I haven't bought the bag salad. It's been recommended, but I tend to buy mine one at a time.
Bread gets the same way, unfortunately.
By the way, 50, I'm talking to you from a Logitech H 450 headset due to technical difficulties with a dying laptop.
Nice.
This is a USB headset with microphone.
Well, Netminer, I have to say, you sound a lot better than you have in the recent past.
Also, I picked up, just for a backup, I have an independent microphone. I noticed the difference between the return mic at Micro Center, which was an ATR 1100, and the one on the shelf, which was a 1200 model. The 1200 model had the same specs, but they had a fitting to go on top of a microphone stand like you'd find in an auditorium or what have you. I got the returned one and saved $6.
Yeah, I'm just using an all-in-one headset. I for a while there, for a couple of years, I used a standalone mic, and it was probably better quality as long as I remembered to talk into the mic every time I talked. And anytime I got turned around doing this and doing that, you know, then you didn't hear me.
Well, since I've had some problems with a bad install of Linux before, I didn't know whether the headset would work or I would need to go to a headphones and microphone setup through the onboard audio system.
Oh, I did make a note for you, Netminer. It was something I know I heard on Podnuts. I don't know if they were talking about it on the live show last week or if it was in one of the shows I heard Dor talk about. Q4OS with the numeral 4. Says it'll run on a 300 megahertz machine.
Yeah, well, I've got some stuff that will run on my older gear. The machine that I was having trouble with is a 32 megabyte system. I haven't been able to find 32 megabyte 60 or 70 nanosecond fast page SIMs. Actually, that's going to be a DOS box, and I may do DOS networking, especially giving it a limited connectivity through a Linux box.
Yeah, you probably need to filter it through something.
Well, also, I have, or would have, a couple of Linux machines that have 100 megabit native port and something faster that I actually hook up to my gigabit house network. I would like to get it so that my DOS machine can update its packages, which is available on FreeDOS, but it does require a DOS packet driver and stuff.
Well, I made a couple notes for the pre-show. I got a chance last week to watch Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix, which I thought was pretty good. Sort of an anthology. All the episodes are, you know, different sci-fi or sort of horror things. Most, except for the one episode with Topher Grace, they were all, looks like they were all mocap. In other words, they used, live action, but then they were all sort of digitized and put in animation. The woman, I just can't place it, but it just seemed to me watching it, maybe because I was sort of late at night, half in a daze when I should have been in bed. You know, some of the stories seemed familiar to me, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Maybe familiar, maybe authors that I have seen before, or, you know, recognizing something.
Yeah, I still haven't watched it yet. I'm hoping to, though.
It's pretty good. It's just, you know, weird feeling that a lot of the, you know, I've either read the story or seen another, you know, seen it brought to the screen in another way, but not able to put my finger on it. The other thing I found out, to my delight, was that I had mentioned on this show I'd watched the first two or three episodes of Krypton on, I think it's Sci-Fi. Just watching it in the browser, you were able to do that, and then it got to, you know, yeah, here's, that was your taste. You don't get to do that anymore. But I found out, since I'm a DC Universe subscriber, now that the second season has started of Krypton, the whole first season is there on DC Universe for streaming.
Cool. How are you liking Doom Patrol so far?
Oh, I love Doom Patrol. See, that was the Krypton was the good news. The bad news, and I haven't confirmed it, but there's at least one YouTuber out there who does reviews is of the opinion Warner Brothers bought DC. Warner Brothers wants their own streaming service and would rather not have, you know, be paying to have a competing streaming service out there. So the one thing he said was they had three episodes left to shoot of Swamp Thing, and they went in, shut it all down, going to rewrite so that they can tie everything up in one episode. I guess Titans has started filming the second season. Haven't seen anything about if they're going to shut that down or not. So I'm thinking more than a year, they're probably going to, it looks as if WB is going to kill the DC Universe streaming service and not bring any of this. At least this one YouTuber said it doesn't look like any indication they're going to bring stuff over on whatever new service they're planning to start next fall, especially if they're shutting stuff down. So that may be complete speculation or whatever, but look, you know, if I had to guess, it'd be a combination of, well, yeah, we just bought this company and we don't want them competing with what we want to do. And secondly, and I'm not pointing any fingers, you know, anybody on the cast or any of the listeners, but I do get an idea that a lot of people said, oh no, we're not going to pay for a service that's just one show at a time. And there may be a lot of people out there getting the content without providing a revenue stream for DC. If that's true, you know, no matter how popular Doom Patrol is, it's, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to continue it. I mean, I want Doom Patrol to go on forever. That's the best thing I've seen this year.
And Titans. I've enjoyed Titans as well.
Well, it's like, you know, I saw Titans. I thought, man, that's really good. Then I saw Doom Patrol. I think I said this the last episode. Yeah, I like Titans. I like Young Justice. But, man, yeah, far and away, Doom Patrol is the best thing on that network. I looked the other day to see if there was a save Doom Patrol site up yet and couldn't find anything. Might be speculation, you know, from this one YouTuber. You know, he seems to not be, you know, he definitely has particular problem with some of the stuff with, well, like Captain Marvel, few of the other shows that thanks, you know, promoting feminism, which I don't see any problem with having a strong female hero, but, you know, this guy kind of goes off, and, you know, he had a little trouble with the Danny Street episode of Doom Patrol, and I was like, man, if you know, I never heard of Doom Patrol before they really came out in live action, but, you know, if you did your research and you looked on the internet, definitely you know that Danny Street is a part of it. And, you know, I thought, well, we'll never have to worry about that, because how do you do that in live action? And darn if they didn't pull it off. It's the most impressive thing that I've seen lately.
Yeah, well, hopefully DC Universe sticks around for a while.
Or at least the shows that they have find a home somewhere else, maybe on this new WB service. Fingers crossed.
Or Netflix, since that's where Titans went international.
True, but again, it seems like the WB is probably, if it is them pulling the strings behind this and saying, hey, we just don't want any kind of competition, probably they don't see it as much better throwing it over on Netflix as they're probably looking at, yeah, we're trying to start our own little streaming service. Why would we give people reason to give dollars to Netflix?
Yeah, good point.
So you heard it here. Somebody wants to start a Save Doom Patrol campaign. I'm 100% on board. Okay, does anybody want to make any more pop culture references before we start the show?
Perhaps I'm nearly as shocked to find gambling at Rick's as I am to find us starting the show this close to the official time.
Well, we've pulled it off once or twice before. I'd offer to host, but I've kind of got a scratchy throat. I don't think I'm coming down with anything, but I am coughing even more than usual.
Okay, I'll take it.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks, where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Blindridge, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like the gas, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it back.